Well, hey, it is Brent back here with you. Well done. Congratulations on picking up the video version of the Money Drop Shot Playbook. And let's get straight to it. And, you know, the first thing that we really got to work on is really believing why this matters. And in terms of being able to spend enough time working on the drop shot so that you really increase, you know, what you can do on the tennis court to disrupt your opponents, and both singles and doubles. And one of the things that comments that I get pretty frequently is, Brent, my God, you got such a great drop shot. What's the secret sauce? And the secret sauce to me has just been kind of a tongue-in-cheek remark, which has always been, well, you know, I probably at this point hit maybe 11,218 more than you have. I'm just a little further ahead than you are in terms of the reps. And we're to go through it. And I'm going to tell you exactly how to develop the feel for a drop shot. And that's part of the 11,000 plus that I've gotten myself baked into my drop shot. And in the end, that's really what we need to do, is just start in practice and in matches, building up those reps. So you really start to develop the feel for it, the execution for it, but the timing of when to do it, depending on where your opponent is on that court over there. All right. So again, if you're not hitting at least one disguised drop shot every game, I think you're leaving big time money on the table. And the reason is that too often we just think, well, we're going to work our opponent side to side. And that ends up being more of a keep away mindset, trying to thread the needle over there. And we just don't really force that opponent over there to have to do a lot of court coverage. Much easier for them to move side to side than it is force them to move up and back. And that's really what this is all about here, is you've got to make them an all-court player. They have to worry about the threat that you're presenting, that you're going to make them visit all parts of the court. They're going to have to cover more court than they ever have before. And yet, you know, your drop shot never has to be an outright winner. In fact, the ideal drop shot that I've found is a two-shot play where you play it well enough that they can get to it, and they just kind of fight it off, scoop it up to you. And the next thing you know is I love to, you know, unless I've got a wide open court to hit the next shot into, I love to lob over their backhand, right? And if it's a deep enough lob, they've got to go back and get it. Or if it's more, it's not so deep with the lob, but now it's over their backhand, super awkward shot for them. They're stumbling around over there. They might push it back, but now you've got another opportunity for, you know, another easy open court outright winner. Or maybe, depending on how far back they are, diabolically, you play another drop shot and pull them in. For me, the biggest benefit, the biggest reason that we want to do this is we drain their fuel tank. And if we're just working shots side to side, never bringing them in, that fuel tank really never ever gets hurt. And obviously, we want to use that as a tactic from time to time, which is to just tire them out. Look, this is not a high technical stroke with perfect spin. I know it's taught out there, oh, you gotta be able to hit a perfect, you know, a lot of spin. It's got to really drop and never, you know, it's got to stop and not, you know, hardly any bounce. And the reality is, at least for me, I found that the less stroke technique, the less spin that I bring to it, I'm way more consistent with it. And yeah, they might get to it, maybe a little bit more than an absolutely dead perfect drop shot. And as I just described, that's okay. You know, the ideal for me is it's going to be a two-shot play. They're going to get to it. They're going to give me something I can now work with. And so I don't ever want you thinking that we've got to perfect this with, you know, world-class pro-level stroke technique to make this work. So look, the ultimate heartbreaker is, as I've been saying, and I'm gonna really hammer this home, is the drop shot burns their fuel tank big time. And that is a serious tactic in tennis. is to wear someone out. Try to think that we're going to thread the needle up the line or cross court to stretch them out wide consistently. It's just a losing tactic. We're just never, ever going to be consistent enough to do that. So, we gotta start thinking differently in terms of forcing them to have to cover the entire tennis court over there. And the other benefit of this, when you are showing at least one drop shot a game, whether you're serving, whether you're receiving, is it now gets in their mind that it forces them to have to play on top of or just inside their baseline. Your ground strokes just got way tougher. And what that means is if you're only playing them from side to side, you're never bringing them in, they're going to be camped out a couple, 2-3 feet behind the baseline. And no matter how well you hit your ground strokes with depth, it doesn't really bother them. And so you can hit a standard ground stroke to a guy that you've now forced them to consider. They've got to be an all-court player. You've dragged them in on top of or just inside the baseline. And now your standard forehand or backhand, especially when you go right at them, it's tough, man. It really forces them to have great footwork to get out of the way. So, yeah, I mean, your ground strokes just got a whole lot tougher when you start threatening them with the possibility of a drop shot. And really, for them, in terms of movement, running side to side, moving side to side, it's not even running. It's just a step or two to their right, step or two to their left, is so much easier. It's not really running, as opposed to having to move up and back, right? The one thing they don't want to have to do is go in a dead sprint to get drop shot after drop shot, put on the brakes, and then move back. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be, you shouldn't be working the ball from side to side. You should, but we don't want to make it to where that's our only shot choice in terms of, you know, allowing them just a couple of steps to the right or just a couple of steps to their left. And, you know, what I've discovered with pushers, and there's a couple of guys in my age group who are classic pushers. I mean, classic in terms of they don't really have great stroke technique. You really can't read what they're about to do. And, you know, the incoming pace to you is soft. They're sort of challenging you. Hey, why don't you go ahead and go for it? Go big time on it. And what do? Well, you know, we might hit a ding a winner now and then, but way too often we're missing. And so they want to stay back. Well, the reason that they want to stay back is either they don't volley well, or they're just thinking that, you know, this is the only tactic they've really got in their toolbox, which is just to push. Yeah, most of these guys can run like a deer. They're quick from side to side. But if you start to show them that they've got to play closer on top of the baseline, you're going to bring them into that area of the court that they don't want to visit. Things change. And what I've discovered over the years against pushers is that you've got to show some drop shots, not only to bring them in, but also to get them up closer to their baseline. As I said before, where any kind of deep standard ground stroke from you, especially right at them, is a real challenge for them to have to cover. And for me, the perfect drop shot combo is what I've said. I almost want them to get to it. I don't feel that need that's got to be perfect where they don't even try. I mean, to me, yeah, I mean, I hit, you know, we all hit some perfect drop shots from time to time where it's so good that that guy over there doesn't even start to, you know, doesn't make even the first step to try to get to it. To me, okay, I'll take it. But in the end, I want it to be good enough consistently to where they think that they've got a chance. And so at least they make a move to it. Maybe they don't get to it in the second bounce. Maybe they pop it up, miss it. Maybe they pop it up and give you a wide open court opportunity. Or maybe diabolically, that's right, you go with a lob over their backhand. For me, it's always a two-shot combo mindset. So let's talk about the technique. How are we going to hit this thing so it's consistent and that we feel that we get all the benefits of being able to play at least one drop shot a game? Is number one is the technique is disguise is the secret sauce, right? So if you've got two separate, let's say, backhand, you've got a ground stroke and you've got a drop shot, but they look different. The setup position looks different. You're just telegraphing to that opponent what you're about to do. And so the real secret sauce, what I've discovered over the years, is that the setup position has to look the same. That opponent over there has no idea what you're about to do. You're either about to play a standard backhand from that setup, deep ground stroke, or you're about to play a drop shot, and they don't know what's coming, right? And so you could call it false advertising, you can call it disguise, whatever you want, but that's the real key, the first thing to work on technique-wise, is not the swing path, is not the spin, is not the grip, but is developing that same look from whether you're going to play a ground stroke or whether you're going to play whether you're going to play a drop shot. Look, the grip for me is a continental grip. And for a lot of players, it's not. For a lot of players, like, let's say, for example, that they've got an Eastern forehand or they've got a full Eastern backhand grip. I've seen a lot of players who set up in their standard ground stroke grip, that full Eastern, but the last second they can nuance the grip to where they can play a little bit of natural underspin. It's not a big hack, it's not a big carve, but it's a little bit of natural underspin. Obviously, we're never going to topspin a drop shot. That's just going to bounce and keep going. So whatever works best for you, you can tinker with this. The key on whatever grip you set up with is you got to have soft hands. If you're clenching at all, then you're not going to be able to nuance if you need to change that grip from a, let's say, a full Eastern to a, you know, either a full continental or maybe a hybrid. And I would say in my, especially on my backhand, I probably go more towards that in between continental and an Eastern backhand grip in terms of a hybrid type of grip. You got to tinker with it and see what feels the most natural for you. But for sure, you got to have soft hands. There can be no clenching at all. It's not a severe high to low swing path. I mean, I think we see a lot of this on the pro tour where these guys and these gals can really, you know, they've got this big swing path at it. And yeah, it's disguised, but it's pretty severe. I think they need to get more spin just because that opponent over there has got more speed than the rest of us. That's okay. But we don't need to go that severely high to low. We don't need to create that much spin to be able to be super consistent with our drop shot, make it deadly, and win a lot of points off of it. So look, for me, it's just kind of a soft, with that relaxed soft grip, it's kind of a slight underspin where I actually don't try to get rid of the ball, right? If it's too severe high to low swing path, we typically get rid of the ball too fast. And I think what happens is that makes the ball float and sit up over there. I like to kind of have more of a linear, slight high to low swing path that still looks like it might be a ground stroke, but it's soft. You allow the ball to sit on the racket a little bit. Yes, it's got some underspin, but it's not crazy. So their part of this is the real world target. And I've talked a lot about this, the difference between a moving target, which is your opponent, and a stationary target, which is a spot above the top of the net, or the spot above the tape, a spot above the white line, right? I mean, if we're in a backboard, hitting backboard, and there's a painted white line, we never think of a moving target over there because there's not one. All we ever think about is, I want to make sure that whatever shot I'm working on here is that it goes above the white line. It's the same thinking when we're playing points, right? When we're playing a match, is that if we are trying to time this and our target is a moving target, that opponent, typically what happens is we do two things that kind of create a lot of forced errors. Number one is that we get rid of the ball too soon. We want it off the racket way too early. And the second one is we start peeking, right? We start looking, P-E-E-K, before we've hit it to see where our opponent is, see how well do we actually have to hit this. And when you take your eyes off that ball, when you take your eyes and then put them on that opponent, that moving target, you know, we tend to make some forced errors over there. So instead, for me, what I now trust is I just, in my mind's eye, is the last 10 feet of that ball coming in, I've already got a target picked out, right? Mostly it's going to be up the line, but sometimes it could be cross court. And in my mind's eye, I've got an imaginary target above that spot of the net, above the white line. And I no longer think about that opponent. I assume he's going to get there, and that's okay. But the last thing that we want to do is we want to be thinking, hey, I've got to make this keep away. And if I sneak a peek, see how close this guy maybe is going to get to it, or anticipate it, or guess I'm going to play a drop shot. And then we go, I got to really make this great. Just too many errors. So we got to change how we think about the target. And, you know, this last sentence here, you don't ever have to rush the shot. It's just, it's one of those things that you've got to work on. It's one of those things you got to start to trust. You don't have to get rid of the ball too early. This is a huge mindset shift that takes lots of reps. We're going to talk about repetitions here coming up. But again, it's not brain surgery. It's not rocket science. I think those are the two terms we're looking for here. It just takes a lot of reps. And like I said before, I've got my 11,000 plus in there already. I'm slightly ahead of you in terms of the number of reps. That's why mine maybe is a little bit more consistent and works better for me. But the more reps you put in now, whether it's drilling, whether it's in practice sets, whether it's in matches, the faster you start to build up a total number of reps is the faster that you will start to develop your own unique feel for how to play this shot. So the best way to do this, and this is really part of the reps, is a short court service box only reps. It's called mini tennis. I'm going to get into that in just a second. Before we do that is the next best court position. So look, first thing is executing your drop shot is the first part, right? This is really a two-part shot. And it's just like, what's the right shot, right? All the episodes, I don't know what we're up to now, almost 700 episodes. But what's the right shot is based on two premises. Number one, where's that ball going to land over there? And to enhance the quality of the shot you've just played, where's the next best court position to move to? And it really applies here to the drop shot. So executing the shot itself is part one, but where do you move to next on the court to enhance what you've just done with the drop shot? There are going to be times when, look, the execution is not great, and that's okay. You want to, in that case, let's say it lands a little bit deep, or let's say it sits up a little bit to where you know that opponent's probably going to get to it, and not have to hit up that much, maybe a little bit. But they've got, you know, the ability to go up the line, cross court, maybe right back at you with, you know, some authority. If that's the case, and, you know, I'm always assuming I'm going to hit a really good drop shot that I'm going to move in even closer. But sometimes you can feel, or at the last second after you've played, you can look up and you go, all right, this one's going a little bit deeper than I anticipated or that I was thinking about. That's okay. You're going to move in a step or two to be able to cover as much court as possible. But what you don't want to do is back up, because at least for me, if I sense that my opponent's hit a drop shot, I'm moving in and I think they're backing up, I'm going to redrop, right? And so you got to be able to cover the redrop, and then you got to be able to cover, you know, two or three other shot choices, typically up the line or back cross court. But look, if you've hit a drop shot you feel is really good, and assuming that the guy's going to get to it, but it's going to be down low, he's got to pop it up, I move in even closer. And the reason for that is I want to take time away for whatever they possibly get back, right? Taking time away means they're stuck for that moment in time. Once the ball is off their racket, they're stuck wherever they are. And if you can intercept whatever shot they do play back, take their time away, now you've probably got a wide open court to simply play your next shot into. It's going to be an outright winner. But maybe they play a tough ball, whatever it is, and you feel like there's not a lot of open court, then now you're still taking their time away. You play the lob over their backhand and make them really have to go. So, there's really it's and again without the reps, you're not going to know whether it's, and sometimes this is opponent dependent, right? You've got some guys out there that are super slow, right? Other guys are fast, right? Super slow ones, even sometimes with a not a great execution, I know they're going to struggle to get to it before it bounces twice. I'm going to move in closer to take time away for whatever they play back. So again, we got to get in the reps to get some experiences to know exactly how far in to move after the drop shot. So look, we always got to be hunting for opportunities here, for drop shot opportunities. And I think the first one, well, there's really two, but the first one is going to be when you play a deep ground stroke and doesn't necessarily have to be right at them. It could be a little bit to their right or a little bit to their left, but when they back up, right? When they back up to buy some time because they don't want to step in and play your deep ground stroke on the rise as a pickup, they back up. Soon as I see that, I mean, I'm just thinking, I want to move forward because whatever comes back, I want to take their time away, right? And so I'm almost hoping when I back someone up or I take them slightly out wide and I think I've got them stretched out wide, I know their stroke technique is going to be somewhat compromised out there. I'm hoping when I move in that they give me some pace because now I've got the ball and they're out of position. They're either out of position back behind the baseline or they're out of position out wide. And whatever they give me back, I'm either going to play. Maybe it's going to be a drop volley. It could be, I can only get in or we can only get in, let's say halfway, maybe halfway between the baseline and the service line. I'm happy with that. I'm happy knowing they're out of position and whatever they give to me, it's a volley. I'm going to work on a drop volley. I'm going to get a feel for that. Maybe it's a tricky little half volley. Same deal. We got to work on that to be able to, force them now since they're way back behind the baseline or you've moved them out wide. That what's the longest distance that you could make them run? Well, it's going to be back up to the net, right? That's going to be geometrically the longest distance that that you can force them to run. So we're going to work on a drop volley from what used to be called, no man's land. We're going to work on that. We're going to work on a half volley from that area. Or maybe we're going to play, a ball land short and we're going to play a disguised approach shot. Most players think that we're coming in. We're playing a deep approach shot. We're not. We're going to make it look like approach shot. And then we're going to feather a little drop shot over there as well. So there are times too when you want to mix in a deep approach shot, that's fine. But you got to make sure that the majority of the time when you back them way up or when you pull them out wide, that you move in and whatever shot you have to play next is you're going to play a dropper. Couple things to remember here. This is always a two-shot mindset. If you're getting yourself into I don't trust if that opponent gets to my drop shot that I'll be able to win the point. You're going to end up trying to fine tune it so much that you're going to miss a boatload. And you don't want to do that. You always want to assume they're going to get to it. Lots of times they don't. But when they do get to it, that's okay. Right? And so we never ever want to miss this thing in the net. We always want to make sure that we get it over the net. We never want to miss it wide. There's no point in having to go right, flirting with that sideline over there. We're never going to miss it in the net. We're never going to miss it wide. And worst case is your drop shot, it's too deep, right? Or it sits up and you're still okay, right? You've still got this part. You've still got this opponent moving in, getting them out of their comfort zone maybe, burning fuel, getting them out of position. And I can't tell you how many times I played really bad looking drop shots and still win the point. Sometimes they think it's a fat, juicy opportunity. They go for something big, miss it. Sometimes they go for something big, they hit it, but you're there, and now you've got the ball. They've robbed themselves of time to get back into the court. You got an open court where you can just, you know, play your next shot into. But I don't ever want you to think that you absolutely have to hit an outright winner to make this work. And as I said, look, your next shot is either wide open court, passing shot, which is another two-shot mindset. I always assume that my opponent can get to anything I hit, right? And what I like about that mindset is that I never put any pressure on myself to have to go so big that it's keep away. And I used to do that, made a lot of open court errors. And you want to make sure that you really start to trust a two-shot mindset. So I said before, whatever in that open court opportunity, make sure you take the sideline out of it. You never have to go close to sideline. Take the baseline out of it if you're going to play a lob as well. Does this work for doubles? Absolutely. Right? I mean, how many players have we played against in doubles when we're serving that the returner, they stay way back, right? Or when they're serving, they stay way back. What do they typically want to do? Right? They want to start the lob fest. That's their strategy. That's their tactic, is to force you into having hit a boatload of overheads, get frustrated, start having to go, thinking you have to go for winners. And the next thing you know is you start making some mistakes, some errors, and that's exactly what they want you to do. We're not going to let them do it. What we're going to play is if you've got someone who loves to camp out there a couple feet behind the baseline, rather than playing a volley right back at them, and I know it's been taught, well, you got to play deep, you got to play a deep volley. You know, that is so hard to be consistent with. We don't really volley well enough if they're a couple, 2 or 3 feet behind the baseline, to where it really bothers them. At least it bothers them enough to where, I can't lob this. They can always lob it. We got to start working on the drop volley. We got to force them up inside their baseline, right? Sometimes the return to serve, if this guy serve and scoots back, I'm going to play a little short chip kind of a return. It's, you can call it a drop shot. Might not be a pure drop shot. Sometimes it is. Right? But it ends up being a short ball that forces them inside. Sometimes we get balls where we can play a transitional approach on. Same deal, right? Same exact deal is we don't want to feed the beast over there in terms of letting that guy or that gal start the lob fest. So, and look, it's the same next shot tactic. If I got someone who wants to stay back, great. Stay back. Now I'm going to make you deal with this. I'm going to make you deal with this drop shot. They're going to run in. What are we going to do now? We're still thinking tactically. I want to drain that tank over there. I want to drain their fuel tank over there. And we know what happens when you drain someone's fuel tank. They realize, God, I can't stay out here too much longer in the court. What are you going to do? They're going to start going for bigger and bigger shots so they can get out of the point sooner to conserve whatever fuel they've got left. And so my tactic is always thinking, I'm going to play the dropper, play it short, bring them in, and whatever comes back, maybe it's a lob over their backhand, could be, or maybe it's now you got a wide open court in the middle between the two opponents over there, and you can go for it, right? You can go for a ground stroke or a volley or whatever you're... you've been given, and go for the middle and just, you know, kind of work it from there and see whatever comes back, right? So eventually you want to force them to feel like, as in singles, they've got to be an all-court player. They've got to be able to cover the drop shot. They've got to be able to cover the short ball, right? And once you do that, once you get them on top of the baseline, or well inside the baseline where they've got to honor the fact that you might be doing this, another drop shot, is now all of a sudden any kind of return that you play that's deep, any kind of approach shot you play that's deep where they're standing on top of the baseline, or maybe they're a foot or so inside the baseline, without having to add any more power, any more pace, but just the depth, and you go right at them, I'm telling you, all of a sudden, your ground strokes, your approach shots, your returns of serves, your volleys get a whole lot tougher. So look, just like in singles, I want to make sure that you are really considering if you're playing against that kind of opponent, is that in doubles, is that you are, is that you're throwing in one drop shot or one very short ball every game. So let's go through how we build the feel for this shot. And it's less technical, and it's more going through some drills so you develop a soft feel for what it's like for that ball to kind of come off your racket without, you know, the need for a severe high to low swing path, without the need for a ton of spin. Look, I learned this way back in the day, and most kids are taught this early on, is we play mini short court service box only points, right? Where you guys are starting, right there, maybe a foot or so behind the tee. And, you know, you hit a couple of balls back and forth to each other. And the service boxes are your constraint, right? You can't hit the ball wide, obviously, and you can't hit it past, it can't land past the service line, the respective service lines, and you can't volley this, right? So it'd be one thing to, you know, play a little ball, then move in and look to volley. You have to let the ball bounce, right? So you get an opportunity here to really start to feel in the mini court service box only points of how you can move your opponent around. And again, you're going to force them, you know, or they're forcing themselves constraint wise to use the same service box to hit into your side. But again, you guys cannot volley. You guys have got to allow the ball to bounce. Fourth ball live points to 30. This is a great drill. I just picked this up recently, and I love this drill because it does offer some constraints while at the same time you are keeping score. And so fourth ball lives means that, well, first of all, let me just back up, is that you're always hunting for them to back up, right? That's your first thing to work on. That's your first sign that you've got a drop shot opportunity, is when you see an opponent, back up. After that, sure, when you take them out wide, that's also an opportunity too, to start moving in and looking and hunting for a ball that you can play a drop shot on, or a drop volley, or a drop approach, right? So look, here's how we work the fourth ball live points. We're using the singles court only. Doubles alleys are out, so we're using singles court only. And we're going to keep score the first player to 10. We then go on to the next segment, which I'm going to show you here. So there's no serving. Player number one drops and hits a cooperative ground stroke, forehand or backhand, doesn't matter. But I'll tell you this right now, when you start the rally, if you're working on your forehand, you're working on your backhand, drop that ball out in front of you where you get an opportunity to get a rep on what is your ideal perfect ground stroke. Where's your contact point that you always want? What's the feel and the grip that you always want? Let's say for a forehand, for example. What's the swing path that you always want? What I see too often is when players start a drill with a ground stroke, they just pull the ball out of the pocket and just slop it over. And that's telling your brain, hey, this is how we hit a forehand. No, we want to habituate. That's a perfect opportunity to tell your brain, this is what we want to do every time we get a forehand. So hit that first ground stroke, the first out of four, perfect. All right, the second ball comes back from your practice partner. Again, it's a cooperative ground stroke that comes back to you. Third ball, another cooperative ball that you hit back to your practice partner. Again, you're not going for big depth. You're not going for big winners. The fourth ball now, which is going to be your practice partner, assuming that you've started the rally with the first ball, now it becomes live. They don't have to be cooperative with that fourth ball. They get to play it out. And you guys play out points from there. And the first player to win 10 of those points, and it doesn't matter who starts the rally, either player can start the rally depending on who's got the balls at that particular time. But let's say, for example, that you win 10 points to 7, all right? We now go on to the first one to 15. You keep your score and your practice partner keeps their score. You've got 10, they've got 7. Now what we do, again, we play fourth ball live. We're not serving. And we're playing cross court using the doubles due sideline, right? There's an imaginary line that you got to draw from the tee back to the baseline, which is the new sideline. But we're only playing cross court. Now what we've got is we've got a serious constraint in terms of the amount of court that we get to hit into. But this is beautiful because now as soon as you hit a deep ground stroke, and now whatever comes back, you're showing that disguise, let's say in a backhand, and you've backed that player up, that opponent up, now you're going to play a drop shot, right? And whatever they get to, whatever comes back, maybe we've got a little, it's going to be a smaller, you know, quote unquote, wide open court to hit into, so you got to be careful, but maybe you throw in a lob, right? So the constraint, again, is we're going cross court only. We're drawing an imaginary line from the tee back to the baseline, back to the center mark there, and we get to use the alley cross court into the deuce side, right? And the first one to get to 15, maybe that's you. Maybe now the score is 15 to 12, right? Or maybe they've come back. You know, we started off this cross court at 10-7 you, but maybe they somehow, and you know, maybe they've got to 15 before you did. That's okay. Whatever it is, we then switch sides and we do the same drill, fourth ball live, rally only, no serving, cross court doubles to the ad side of the court, right? Again, the same type of constraints in terms of sidelines from the tee back to the center mark. Again, what are you working on? You're working on, can you force them to back up, right? Or if, and this is tougher to pull them out wide because you got such a little court to hit into. For me, it's a great opportunity to work on my roll forehand, that kind of high. It's not a lob, but it's a roll forehand. And if it's deep enough, most of those opponents, those practice partners back up. I start moving in looking for something that I can play short as a drop shot. Okay, first one to get to 20. Then what we do is we go up the line, right? And it's the same, fourth ball live, there's no serving. And we use the doubles sideline, but we're doing the deuce court, right? So, for example, we're doing the deuce court to your opponent. You're now on the ad side. Your opponent, your practice partner's on the deuce side. We're just going up the line. Again, imaginary sideline from the tee back to the center court, back to the center mark, right? First one at 25, we then switch it up. We go to the other side. You're now on the deuce side. And that opponent of yours is over there, your practice partner is over there on the ad side. This is a great drill. And I just got turned on to it recently, and I love it because of all the constraints in it in terms of, you know, cross court, in terms of up the line, and yet you're keeping score, and yet you're still working on what I found, especially when you've got a practice partner who's super consistent, and I've got one here in Steamboat. She's ridiculous. I mean, it's really hard to win points unless I really show that disguised drop shot, because with the constraints that I have to hit into, she gets so many balls back. I love it, but I got to really work on the disguise. And so it's a great, great practice opportunity for reps for that. So the next thing you can do, and I kind of like to do this after the 30, is to go back to the short court mini service box and keep points, right? So again, let's do a fourth ball live. First three balls are cooperative, fourth ball's live, right? Got to let them bounce, and you're working the feeling of the drop shot. Either it'd be cross court, maybe it's right back up the middle, or maybe up the line, whatever it is, but you're going to keep points to 11. The next thing is we're going to play some service points. If you want to play singles, that's fine. You could play cross-court doubles, right, as well, where, again, you're drawing that imaginary line from the tee back to the center court mark. But you're going to play some serve points. And again, what I like to do with this is I like to stay back. I mean, sometimes this is not a serve and volley drill. This is more of developing the depth in ground strokes, backing them up. Maybe you're pulling them out wide, but you're using the whole service box, or you're using just, you know, the cross court doubles. Play some points serving to 11. Make sure that you get your shoulder good and warmed up. You know, hit maybe 10, 12, 15 practice serves to start, and then play points, right, to 11. Serve the deuce box, serve the ad box, keep going back and forth until one player gets to 11, and then you can switch, and then you can switch servers. Now it's time, you know, eventually you start to play some practice sets. The big thing here for me, when you're putting in reps, and I do this a lot in practice sets, I got to make sure I'm not thinking about the scoreboard, right? I'm not thinking about, here we are, we're playing a practice set. I'm serving at 40-30, got to win this point, or I got to break point 30-40, got to win this point. Looking at the scoreboard just causes too much pressure, too much stress, and you start to lose that opportunity to get the feel for what is the perfect disguised setup position, right? What is your perfect response to when you, whether it's intentional or not, you've hit a really deep ball and you see that opponent over there moving back, right? Giving up their good court position. Or maybe unintentionally you take someone wide up the line where maybe you were just trying to go back up the middle or going cross court. You got to be aware, right? Soon as you create that opportunity where you've stretched them out or you've backed them up, you got to be thinking, I need to step into the court a step or two and look for something that you can take time away. But that really gets back to the scoreboard. Got to be careful. You're not so focused on winning practice sets that you lose the opportunity to develop the feel. Look, the bottom line here is that tons of reps is going to change your game. I've given you, different ways here to build up the feel for the drop, given you different ways with constraints of backing up that opponent, maybe taking them side to side, but you got to get reps in. And look, I would tell you for a while, when you play some matches, you might not feel ready yet in terms of the feel. That's okay, because it's just typical, right? From a practice situation to a match situation, we naturally start to get a little tense, a little tight in the match situation. You know, we don't want to miss. We're worried about the scoreboard, whatever. You got to be able to shift your mindset to, hey, this match is an opportunity to learn more, to get more reps. Might not win the match. That's okay. That's certainly not life or death, whether we win or lose. So the players that tend to take matches and think about them as learning, as growth mindset opportunities, are the ones that actually get the feel faster, especially on this drop shot. So anyway, look, hope this has been helpful. What's next? Look, what's next is I want to help you if you've not already picked up this PDF. It's just a 14-page, really a one sit-down read, how to help you stop rushing during points and making kind of those self-imposed, kind of that mildly panic forced errors. What I've got for you to bust through that feeling, which is the feeling is basically, I just want to play keep away. I want to look for the exit. Don't want to stay in the point too long, right? Don't trust that by staying in the point until I get a wide open court to the next shot into, is this something bad's going to happen? And so what I want to help you do is become a much more consistent shot maker. And there's two ways that I can help you do that. Number one, there's a stroke technique that works for all strokes that we have to build in. We got to bake into ground strokes. We got to bake into volleys. We got to bake into our drop shots. We got to bake this into approach shots. We got to bake this into the serve. We got to bake this into overheads. Every part of our game, there's one stroke technique that I really want you to work on. I'm going to show you how to do that. And the other thing is my timing, right? We got to be super consistent knowing when the ball is going to arrive, when we're going to deliver the racket against the ball in terms of what's ideal for us, right? My contact point and my forehand, for example, could be slightly different than yours. Yours could be slightly different than some guy in the tour. That's okay. We have to know exactly what that reference point is. And I've got a way to help you during the point really be consistent with timing. When you're consistent with timing, you become a shot maker and you force that opponent over there to have to quote unquote go for it sooner in the point. They look for the exit. They really start to contribute to you winning points, to winning games, winning sets and matches. Look, I want you to pick this up if you haven't already done so. Like I just said, it's we got to get you away. We got to get you out of the mindset of a keep away mindset. Again, trying to look for the exit. Don't want them to touch the ball. That's a recipe for errors. So here's what to do right now. This is just $7. We'll get you straight into, it's two PDFs. Right down below, there is a button to push right below this video on the page. There's a button to push. Go ahead and click it. Get signed up. You get immediate access to the two PDFs, and this is really going to help you. Along with what we talked about today with the drop shot, really going to help you get rid of that rushing feeling. Guys, look, if you've got any questions, any feedback, anything that's on your mind you're not 100% sure about, go ahead and shoot me an email, brent@webtennis.com. Again, hope this has been really super helpful today, and I will see you again next time.